Well, I'm speaking to Ellsworth Kelly in the Anthony Doffey Gallery in London. And Ellsworth, I think the starting point perhaps should be the exhibition here in the gallery, which in fact is a series of works that were installed in Documenta 9. I wondered if you could start by perhaps talking about the issues that you had to deal with in transferring this group of works from Documenta 9, from the gallery in Documenta 9, to this gallery here in the centre of London.
Well, at Documenta there were only three pictures. The white picture, which is here at Anthony Doffey, wasn't in the exhibition because the wall that I thought was going to be used was not quite long enough, and it looked better with just the three pictures. I've seen it now in three different gallery spaces. It opened up, the five pictures were shown in Paris at the Templon Gallery, and he had five rooms, so I put one painting in each of the rooms. And one of the pictures, the yellow painting, had been sold earlier and was not available for either Documenta or for here. In Paris, each painting had its own room. And then when it went to Documenta, it was interesting to see how it did change when the three paintings were on in one room. And here, again, we decided through a model that I made back in the United States how to set up the paintings. And when I came, they were already hung, and we moved them a little bit, because I think that with my paintings, more and more, I've discovered that I feel that the paintings have to control the space of the room. And it's very important just how they are in relationship to the other paintings and to the floor or the ceiling, the corners of the room, etc. And each gallery space is a challenge, and you just solve it.
If we could go back to something you wrote about the ground, which I think has occupied you to a very large extent, and you said, if I can quote, I have wanted to free shape from its ground and then to work the shape so that it has a definite relationship to the space around it, so that it has a clarity and a measure within itself of its parts, angles, curves, edges, amount of mass, and so that, with colour and tonality, the shape finds its own space and always demands its freedom and separateness. I wondered if you could elaborate on that statement.
Well, I guess when I left America in 1948, after studying at the Boston Museum School, where I was painting nudes, influenced by the German Expressionists, mostly because the teacher there came from Berlin. I came to Paris and decided almost immediately that easel painting didn't interest me anymore, and that I would have to find something else that would that could satisfy. And I started doing paintings in panels, and and some of the earlier relief paintings that I did were derived from architectural motifs and things that I would see in the street or in buildings, shadows, etc. And I wanted to take marks out of my paintings. I didn't want to be and gesture. I felt that mostly it was that painting to me at that time, which in 1948, 49 in Paris, the school of Paris, meaning the painters like Leger, Picasso, Braque, were great, you know, great artists. But to me, arriving in Paris, I realized that I was not European, and there was no tradition for me to continue in this way. And also that their painting, to me, seemed, for me, seemed too personal. I mean, all painting suddenly became too man-oriented, that the painter decided to do a painting and composed a painting. And what interested me most, I stopped doing the figurative painting. I'd started doing some Picasso-like nude figures and some religious paintings that were related to Romanesque art. And I traveled in Paris, France, and Romanesque sites, and went to the museums and was interested in early art. And somehow or other, that led me into doing the panel works. And I felt that the panel, one, two, or three, or four panels together, in which they were solidly colored, had no marks, and the panel itself became the content. And therefore, I wasn't really that conscious of what, I mean, it wasn't a decision that I said that I was doing this. It's only been later that that I've realized that what I wanted to do was to, in the painting, which I feel has always been, since the Renaissance, has been form and ground sharing the same space. And I say that sculpture, of course, has always been the form, and the space around the sculpture is the ground. So I think that with doing these panel pictures, I put they became the form, and the wall itself became the ground. And in that way, the painting or the work sort of came out into the viewer's world or out into the room, and that's perhaps what I intuitively wanted to do. I was very interested in collage, and in some way, by making collages, I mean, you have a piece of paper which is the ground, and you apply pieces of whatever onto it. And with the collages of Braque and Picasso and Schwitters, it always very much interested me. And I think that rather than thinking of them as paintings, I felt like I didn't want to name it necessarily a painting, but it was something in between painting and sculpture. On that quote that you just quoted, I kind of now like the last part of it where I say something about the painting finding its own space. Of course, it's kind of demands its own space, though I'm doing it. I mean, I say, well, this red panel has to be just here and not 2 inches over to the right or to the left. But I like the idea that well, let me see that again, with that last sentence. It becomes almost as close as I've ever come to being a political artist. And it says, the shape finds its own space and always demands its freedom and separateness. And then I thought afterwards, I said, that's just what we all want. You know, we all want to have our own space. And I think in that way, the paintings are perhaps difficult to understand for people that haven't been involved in the tradition of, you know, of what's painting's been happening for the past 80 or 90 years.
I think there is a sense in which they are, you know, your works are uncompromising. Mm. I mean, they don't refer to, I mean, they're not referential in the sense that a lot of art is. They seem to stay put within the space, and they activate that space, and they set up very specific relationships to one as a viewer. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about the relationships between the individual. And I think one of the obvious relationships is that of scale. But you've talked about the desire to occupy an individual space and to have freedom within that space. I mean, that's another set of interesting relationships.
I think that, to me, they it's you that move in front in the room, and they're similar to how we relate to sculpture. Of course, sculpture does have, sculpture that is of figures has the content. But say abstract sculpture, like David Smith or any of the, or Richard Serra, for instance, where the forms are existing by themselves in space, the content is form, color, and how we relate to the the forms. And I think the same with the with these paintings here, that as you move around, there the scale is that for me, painting is most satisfying if it's slightly larger than me, and that it kind of it dominates me visually. Whereas, and I feel like I can't completely see it, except, of course, if I'm more than 10 or 15 feet away from it, it becomes smaller. But even so, standing in front of a painting as I move from the left to the right, it changes completely. And I remember once a friend of mine came to the studio, and I'd done a painting, large black painting, that was similar to, say, a bow tie, where the center was, or you could say it was like a corner of a room. And this friend said, it's very symmetrical, and I don't get any feeling from this painting. It seems too symmetrical. And it was quite wide, say, 14 feet wide and about 7 feet high. Wait a moment. No, I'm sorry. Yes, it was about that. And then I said, well, come over here to the side of it and look at it from this angle. Whereas half of the painting was very close to you and the other half was going off into space because we were close to the wall looking at it from an angle. And then I said, all right, walk very slowly in front of it and go to the other side and see how this thing changes. And then he said, well, it moves. He thought it's like breathing. And he said, I don't want you necessarily to stand right in front of it, though it is a frontalist image, that it somehow changes as you move in front of it. And to me, I want some of the mystery to be there, that that the person cannot completely capture it in one look, I think most people, when they go look at paintings, take it in a few seconds. Some paintings that are very complicated in content, of course, you go up to them and see what the painter has done, how he's done it, and explore that. But even so, when you go to a museum and you look at Van Gogh, Cézanne, or Picasso, you sort of touch base with the painting and almost in a few seconds then move on to another painting. I think most people keep returning to paintings over and over again. I mean, and look at paintings that way. And I feel that with my paintings, it's the same thing. I think that you have to live with it over time in order for it to mean something to you. The visual part of it is to me where it starts, that my ideas are always sort of based on some visual idea. which perhaps is like that second of just seeing something, even when we're not even thinking. Our eyes are open and we see millions of images all day long. And if you ever think about when you're driving a car for several hours, all the images that are passing in front of your eyes, and the way the images are building up. And so I think with these works especially, that they are fragments of things that we've seen somewhere.
You mentioned painting in the Renaissance and from then on, where the evidence of the signature, the trace of the artist's hand, so to speak, was present. And this is something that you, in a sense, wanted to move away from or move outside of. There is another interesting issue, I think, in relation to conventions that evolved from the Renaissance, which is the rectangular picture, that is, of a geometric shape. The panels that you produce or create often challenge that idea of the rectangle, of the regular geometric shape, and I find, as a result, set up very positive tensions within an architectural space, which is more often than not based on rectangular forms. And in that way, your works seem to me to activate that space. The space becomes part and parcel of the sense of the work.
Well, the early panel pictures which I did, beginning, say, in 1949, through my time that I lived in Paris, they began with rectangles and squares in the panels. Just earlier to that, that led into doing the panels, I was doing fragmented shapes that developed from drawing, cutting up drawings and rearranging them in the way that that Arp had done this. And I had met Arp, and this interested me very much. And so the fragmentation has been very important to me, because it's like chance enters into how we see things. As we move our head, everything that is in our space becomes fragmented. And though the earlier pictures were all rectangles and squares, then when I returned to America, I returned again to the form and ground paintings. And because I suppose I had felt that I was in a new city, New York City, and there was different kind of work going on, and it was the close of a period, the Paris period, and I had to begin in a way again. So I did very large curved forms. I was experimenting with the way color and form, I was experimenting with color and form, and the way that these forms would be cut at the edge of the rectangular canvas. I continued to do panel pictures from time to time, and then it was as if these biomorphic kind of paintings, big black shapes, were trying to squeeze the form, the ground out of the picture. There was very little white around the edges. And so I decided at one point that why not cut it out, cut out the form in metal. And that happened in about 1959. I started doing some painted aluminum pieces. And when I was had 1952 in Paris, I did, it was really my first monochrome. The panel pictures were each monochromes, but they were always done with series of panels. And I had been out to see Monet's studio at a time when all the Nymphéa, the big Nymphéa, were still there. It seemed that people at that time were not interested in the late Monet. And the day after I visited, I did a solid green, what I thought in my memory was a solid green panel. I put it away and never looked at it again until several years ago. There was an exhibition in Lyon called Le Couleur Seul, and I thought, oh, I have this old painting of mine. I'll look it up and see what it's like. And of course, it was very brushy. It wasn't solid green at all. There were blue and several greens looking like leaves underwater, the way Monet's paintings were. And I always say, well, at that same time, or a few years later, Yves Klein was doing his monochrome paintings. And I always felt like, well, I did one rectangular solid color painting, but that was it. I felt not the need ever again to do a solid rectangular square painting unless it was related to another panel. And I did a triptych, red, yellow, and blue, in 1965, and many groups of spectrum colors in rectangles. But I feel that when to do a monochrome, I would have to do something with the shape. And that's what you wanted to discuss, was the fact that somehow or other the shape had to be broken up. And thinking backwards, I would say that, the Renaissance rectangle, or later in Paris when you used to go by the stretchers, it was either a marine, a landscape, or a portrait, and they all had their different proportions. And I felt like, the rectangle or the square has always been a window, and the content in the painting was always something that was visible through an aperture. And I guess I haven't done much study of how people would break, fragment that aperture. But, when you look through a door or a window and you start moving, of course, what's inside the window changes very abruptly. And you can make your own abstract pictures that way. And that, I've talked about this before, but when I was, my first realization of that came when I was quite young, when I was about 12 years old, or might even have been younger. That one evening, when a group of us boys were out on an evening of Halloween, and it was very dark, and I saw in a house there was a window lit, and from a distance I saw through the window a red shape, a blue shape, and a black shape. And I said, what is that? Because they were fragments. And it was the only window that was lit for someone's living room. So I said, I've got to understand what I'm looking at. So I crept up to the window. And when I got to the window, I looked in. I couldn't find it. It had disappeared. Then I backed up again and said, there it is. So then I very slowly came back and realized it was a red couch, a blue curtain, and a black piece of furniture. And it was like abstracting shapes. And that, I mean, just to remember that and to remark it at a very early age, to me proves that certain, for artists, you just continue the seeds in you, and you just sort of continue working and trying to solve all these problems that that interest you. So, and for me still, when, like in this exhibition, the front of the gallery is a very big open window going right down to the floor, and as you walk down the street, the further you get away from it, you can still see the red painting on the back wall, and it seems the further you get away from it, this red painting becomes larger and larger, because the aperture of the front glass window gets smaller, and the red painting gets fragmented against it. And I know that seeing things like that constantly in windows has always interested me. And it's that vision that that I suppose I'm trying to experiment with that that fascinates me.
You mentioned seeing Monet in Paris, and I believe you were there in the late 40s, early 50s. Can you talk about the artists that you met then and the work you saw that was important to you and perhaps that, you know, had an influence on your subsequent development?
Well, when I was studying in Boston, Max Beckmann was invited to the school, and because the teacher had come from Berlin, and he was very fond of Eduard Munch and Kirchner and also Beckmann, that all the students were in the Boston school became kind of a German expressionist. It's Boston expressionism was influenced very much by the German expressionists. So that when I came to Paris, of course, I had the two painters that moved me most were Picasso and Beckmann. And Matisse came much later, of course, but and I know that when I came to Paris on the GI Bill bourse, I went to see if I wanted to enroll in Leger's class, but it didn't. He didn't at that time. I liked his painting very much, but I didn't. I decided that I didn't want a master exactly. I wanted to go to the Beaux-Arts, where I could come and go as I pleased, because I said I've painted the nude enough, and I don't want someone else's brand of abstraction to influence me. I remember seeing Kandinsky for the first, I mean, an exhibition of Kandinsky for the first time, and I was lucky to visit some artists. I visited ARP several times. I visited Brancusi's studio. And I feel that Brancusi and ARP and his wife, Sophie Tober ARP's work, and also the late Monet, seemed to me very impersonal and not anonymous exactly, but less personal than, say, Picasso and Braque, and especially the abstract, the Tachist painters that were working in Paris didn't interest me that much, and I didn't really know what was going on in New York. So, and when I did return, it took me a while to realize how important the abstract expressionists were. But at the very beginning, I felt that here again was a lot of gesture and a lot of personality that was against the way I wanted to make pictures. And I think that though Brancusi, of course, always had a subject for his works, the way he made them and the way he ended up with sort of the form being the prominent thing about his art influenced me very much. And also I visited Van Tongelu, who became very friendly with him. And I remember he used to lecture us a lot and read to us. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm so glad I don't have to have a theory to make my pictures valid. And so people have sort of referred to my work as hard-edged and geometric, but I feel that they're more, to me, fragments of the real world in some way, rather than I don't sit down and try to design a picture within the frame. But I need some kind of a vision or a visionary to a visual for a validity. And my eyes are constantly working against what I'm looking at without thinking about what I'm looking at, but just moving my head and shaping things.
I think you've written somewhere that all of your subsequent work evolved out of your drawings of leaves, of plants.
When I was in Boston school, I had a very good drawing teacher, and we drew every day from the nude. In the mornings and in the afternoons, we painted the nude. And the teacher could very easily show with a few lines the roundness of the flesh, of the arm, or the breast, or the thighs. And I tried constantly to draw, making things exist in nature in a traditional way, like Renaissance drawing. And then, say a year and a half of doing this, suddenly it began to work. That what I saw, and I really believe that anyone can draw if they learn how to see. I mean, if they know what they're, if they investigate what they're seeing, and try to, when they're drawing, to explain what they're seeing. Like one form is in front of another form, the form closest to you is bigger than the form behind you. And that kind of linear drawing, which of course Picasso and Matisse are the masters of, interests me very much, and it all started from that. And somehow I started drawing plant life because they were planar leaves, and it seemed to have a variety of shapes and all the different kinds of variations of shapes that you could play with. And it's a the plant drawing really is a sort of a relaxation, and they're in between the what I look at and what the paintings finally end up. The plant drawings are really just drawings of form, and my paintings are just there are paintings of forms with colors. For instance, if you look at the plant drawings, sometimes there's just one leaf, like a water lily leaf with a very thin stem. Then there are drawings with two leaves, like a acacia leaf, the two leaves. Then there's some with three leaves, four leaves, five leaves, and then on to, say, 20 different leaves. And you can really count them. And my paintings have been, most of them in the past have been, say, two and three form paintings. The spectrums, which have 13 different colors, are many panels. I've done several paintings with a great number of different panels. And now, I guess recently, I've been very much challenged by, can I do a painting with just a single panel with no marks on it, a monochrome single panel? And as I said before, I'm not interested in doing rectangles or squares. The way I've seen recently, there are a lot of monochrome painters that fill up the canvas with one color with many different brush strokes or different techniques, thick, thin, or different materials like encaustic. Or some painters only paint in one color, like there's one artist that paints only gray panels. But to me, my paintings are, I want them to be rather elusive and mysterious, that that you can't ever really get to the end of it. And I think that maybe squares and circles are very finished shapes. And I think that in some way I want my paintings to be almost half done, or in the so that the viewer in some way can finish the idea to, you know, the way he wants to look at it, or how he can accept it, the way we our eyes see the rest of the world. I mean as you walk down the street, all these forms are all fragmented. It's much like I said, it's a chaos. And of course we use our eyes in many different ways, but I'm very interested in using my eyes to sort of investigate shapes. And I mean, it's very pleasurable to me. I mean, it's like not a game exactly, but it's it makes everything seem completely abstract. And I talked about fragmentation earlier. When I went to Barcelona in the mid-70s, I discovered Gaudí. I had thought that I knew about Gaudí, the buildings and the houses and the cathedral. But what surprised me, of course, was his fragmentation of tiles in the famous bench in the Park Güell. And also I found out that they were done. The bench was started about 1903, took about 10 years to finish. And I got several books on Gaudí and studied all his different buildings. And then I discovered the Güell Palace off the Ramblas that was begun in 1885 to 1893. And on the roof, he covered the air vents or chimneys. There's about 20 of them. And they're different shapes, and of course they're covered with these broken tiles. And for having been done then, the first example of a very intelligent way of fragmenting forms, I think this technique, which is called trencadas, which came probably from the Moors, covering a sphere. In order to cover a sphere with tiles, they had to break them up. And most of it is done very decoratively, with designs of flowers and with geometric shapes. But with Gaudí, I think there's something else there. He went to factories and purchased all the broken fragments. And even purchased the original tiles and had people break them up and then rearrange them. And I feel that's what Cubism is really about, is to break something up and put it back together again. And I personally believe that Picasso and Miro in their youth, because Picasso was 19 in 1900, 10 years earlier, these tiles on the roof of the Park Güell were done, and Picasso had a studio right across the street from it. At that time, he was still doing figurative work, and it wasn't until 7 years later, around 1978, that he did his Damoiselles d'Avignon. And Picasso, I think, never admitted that Gaudí was of an influence to him. But I think as a young man, when we're all in our, you know, before, in our teens, that the art that moves us most sticks with us, because for me, it's still Picasso, because I was, when I was very young, that he was the artist that intrigued me the most and I liked. So it holds still till today. And when I saw these fragmented tiles, I thought, someone was here before me, because I had done, early in Paris, I had cut up drawings and rearranged them. And I felt like no one else had really tried to do this kind of thing. You could see that people had done it with paint, like Riopel had fragmented, and of course the Cubists had fragmented a great deal. But the idea of finding another way to compose a picture rather than my own decision fascinated me about that.
You've spoken about an idea about your work isn't in any way a reaction to abstract expressionism, American abstract expressionism, but I wondered if you thought in any sense that your work was part of an American tradition and how you would place it or locate it.
Well, I once said that because to me, I like very much de Kooning, Klein, Rothko, and Newman. But again, they were a generation ahead of me, and they matured rather late, I suppose. They weren't like some of the young painters today, where in their early 20s they have a career already and doing very, very interesting work at a very young age. Of course, I remember saying that Calder interested me, and I got to know Calder, and he became a friend here in Paris, and then I would see him when he was in Connecticut during the late 50s. But painting as such didn't interest me that much. And I said that of the American artists, Audubon, Calder, and the American Indians, so the pre-Indians, like the mound builders, are the ones that have influenced me more than painting as such. And of course, Picasso. Picasso was something we had to get, all of us had to get over. But I find that it was really a reaction to easel painting. I wanted to sort of not do easel painting. I wanted to be... The early paintings I wanted not to sign, I wanted them to be anonymous, I wanted them to exist sort of just as sort of like an anonymous icon.